Picture a jester stepping onto a stage in 1511, bells jingling, ready to deliver the most dangerous speech of the Renaissance. But this fool isn't just any entertainer. She's folly herself, come to praise her own virtues before a European audience hungry for change. Within weeks, In Praise of Folly sold thousands of copies, an unprecedented success that would help ignite the Protestant Reformation. Written in just 7 days while Erasmus recovered from illness at Thomas More's home, this slim volume became so controversial the Catholic Church banned it, yet so beloved that Benjamin Franklin quoted it regularly centuries later. What made a satirical monologue by the personification of foolishness so explosively influential? Because sometimes truth arrives not through solemn philosophy, but through laughter. And sometimes the wisest voice in the room belongs to the one wearing the cap and bells. Born illegitimate in 1467 Rotterdam, Erasmus entered life as an outsider. His priest father had taken vows after falsely believing his pregnant lover had died. Orphaned at 13 by plague, young Erasmus was pushed into monastic life by guardians who saw no option for a bastard with no inheritance. This early taste of religious hypocrisy planted seeds that would bloom into devastating satire. But Erasmus refused monastery walls. His brilliance caught the Bishop of Cambrai's attention, earning him education in Paris. A trip to England connected him with Thomas More and other luminaries. He traveled constantly across Europe, earning his doctorate in Turin and serving as counselor to future Emperor Charles V. By the time gout and dysentery claimed him in Basel in 1536, Erasmus had become Europe's most widely read author. His weapon wasn't sword or pulpit, it was wit sharp enough to slice through centuries of accumulated nonsense. Erasmus made a brilliant tactical decision. Folly herself would deliver a mock heroic speech praising her own influence. This created protective layers of irony. When Folly praises ignorant priests or corrupt bishops, readers understand the condemnation, while Erasmus maintains plausible deniability. In his playful preface to Thomas More, whose surname resembles Moria, Greek for folly, Erasmus defended such light material by citing classical precedents. Homer's mock epic about frogs and mice, Virgil's poem about gnats, Lucian's satirical dialogues. If classical authors could write playfully about trivial subjects, why couldn't a Christian humanist use humor for serious purposes? Folly opens with a bold claim. She delivers more joy than wisdom ever could. Born from Plutus, god of wealth, and nursed by nymphs, she champions spontaneous pleasure over anxious calculation. Her proof? Children, beloved precisely because they lack judgment. Their unfiltered emotions and complete absorption in the present make them irresistible. Yet as we age and acquire wisdom, we become less lovable, more anxious, burdened by knowledge that robs us of innocent joy. Consider self-love, Folly's closest companion. Without it, who would dare speak publicly, create art, or pursue romance? Remove this one affection from life, Folly declares, and the orator's voice will freeze, the musician's melodies will please no one, the actor will be hissed off the stage. Perfect self-awareness breeds paralysis. We need strategic self-deception just to function. Friendship survives through selective blindness, finding quirks endearing rather than irritating. Marriage depends on overlooking defects, maintaining harmony through sweet delusions rather than brutal honesty. The wise person who sees all faults clearly becomes incapable of love. Perhaps nature limited human reason to make happiness possible, because the fool, blissfully ignorant, builds families, fights for causes, and enjoys simple pleasures without philosophical torment. Erasmus turns his satirical lens on society's institutions. Scholars waste lives on absurdities. How many angels can dance on a pin? Could God have taken the form of a gourd? Lawyers succeed by complicating simple matters with jargon, creating problems only they can solve for substantial fees. Physicians hide uncertainty behind Latin diagnoses. The more ignorant and reckless the physician, Folly notes, the more he is esteemed by bejeweled nobles, because people desperately want to believe in medical authority. Politicians master beneficial folly, flattery, dissembling, adapting to rulers' whims. the man who would speak truth to power would quickly find himself without influence. Government depends on strategic ignorance and collective pretense that rulers possess special wisdom. Even marriage and friendship rely on mutual self-deception. Husbands overlooking wives' flaws, friends convincing themselves of each other's exceptional qualities. Erasmus reserves his most daring critique for the Catholic Church, using folly's mock praise as protective irony. Monks obsess over precise fasting schedules and prayer formulas while neglecting genuine charity. Bishops hunt after wealth more than souls, while cardinals live in princely luxury. The sale of indulgences receives devastating mockery. Merchants of salvation prescribe precise periods of purgatory down to the year, month, day, and hour, selling relief from invented punishments as if consulting mathematical tables. Yet Erasmus delivers this as loving criticism from a devoted son, questioning only the implementation by fallible humans who've substituted ritual for genuine faith, never Catholic doctrine itself. By having folly praise these hypocrisies, he exposes them more effectively than direct condemnation could. The reader becomes complicit in the satire, nodding along as each profession's pretensions are deflated through mock celebration. This strategy, wrapping dangerous ideas in entertainment, makes readers laugh so they'll actually listen, transforming critique into something powerful and unforgettable. Erasmus connects Christian theology to beneficial folly. Scripture celebrates divine foolishness transcending human wisdom. Paul declared, "The foolishness of God is wiser than men," while Christ taught we must become as little children to enter heaven. His teachings invert conventional wisdom. Blessed are the poor in spirit. Love your enemies. The last shall be first. The greatest saints appeared as madmen, Saint Francis speaking to birds, martyrs joyfully accepting torture, hermits abandoning society for God. Erasmus contrasts two paths to knowing God. Scholastic theology involves complex reasoning, often breeding pride rather than insight. The alternative means accepting divine mysteries with childlike faith. The entire Christian religion bears a certain affinity to folly and in no way agrees with wisdom. The central Christian belief that God became human and died on a cross appears absurd by rational standards, yet contains deeper wisdom than all philosophical systems. The paradox completes itself when folly, in her most insightful moments, stops being foolish at all. Her praise of religious folly becomes genuine praise of spiritual wisdom appearing foolish to worldly eyes. 5 centuries later, In Praise of Folly remains startlingly relevant. Erasmus understood laughter not as escape, but as survival. His mockery of academic specialization perfectly describes today's universities, where scholars pursue narrow questions while losing sight of broader human concerns. His observations about politicians prioritizing appearance over substance could describe any modern election. His recognition that excessive self-awareness leads to paralysis anticipates modern research on overthinking and depression. What makes this work timeless is its profound humanity. Erasmus embraced the full complexity of human nature, our rationality and irrationality, our nobility and absurdity. Rather than demanding impossible perfection, he celebrated our imperfect, contradictory selves. In a world torn between ideological certainties, Erasmus offers a liberating perspective. Perhaps we are all, in different ways, fools, and acknowledging this shared folly might be the beginning of true wisdom. 500 years on, folly's gentle laughter reminds us that a little foolishness might be exactly what our overly serious, anxiously rational world needs most.